From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Center for Constitutional Rights, together with a number of advocacy organizations, has just published a report on ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, showing that it has generated bills that promote racism and white supremacy in states across the country. ALEC, whose annual summit opens in Arizona this week, has been the source of cookie-cutter state-level bills on a host of conservative issues. The report by CCR is called ALEC Attacks: How Evangelicals and Corporations Captured State Lawmaking to Safeguard White Supremacy and Corporate Power. We go now to Arizona to speak with Dominic Renfrey, who is an advocacy program manager at the Center for Constitutional Rights and was involved in the report, and Anne Whitehat, an indigenous water protector based in Louisiana. Welcome to the program, Dom and Anne.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Dom, let me start with you. Tell me a little bit about this report. There have been reports written by other organizations, such as the Center for Media and Democracy, on ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. But for those who are not familiar with it, because it's a little known organization, what is ALEC, and specifically, what did your report focus on?
Well, thanks for having us on. It's great to be talking about this. So, as you point out, there's been some excellent advocacy work and research work done into ALEC by Center for Media Democracy and Common Cause and Color of Change and others for many years. The focus of this report, which hasn't been so revealed as extensively as this up till now, is the impact that these ALEC laws are having on people of color, on communities up and down the country. So just to step back, though, for those who are coming new to this, the American Legislative Exchange Council goes back about 46 years. It was founded by an evangelical conservative Christian activist called Paul Weyrich, referred to by Newt Gingrich once as probably the second only to Ronald Reagan as the person most responsible for the modern conservative movement, had a lot of zeal and was intent on pushing conservative social policy into the political sphere after the gains that had been made in the civil rights movement. ALEC finds itself at a financial problem, basically, around the 90s, and it starts to collaborate much more with industry and the corporations. So, and that's been the model since. So basically, you're seeing a coming together of state lawmakers, and ALEC claims about a third of all state lawmakers up and down the country, so that's thousands of state lawmakers, coming together in secret and drafting legislation with corporations and conservative activists. We can get into it, but that has led to many, many of these laws that have had huge impacts on activists and people of color up and down the country, one of them being our client, Anne Whitehead.
So let's turn to Anne. Tell me, Anne, first about the activism that you are engaged in, the work that you do, and specifically how it is that ALEC's policymaking has deeply personally impacted you.
Yes, thank you. I'm Indigenous. I'm Sichangu Lakota from South Dakota, and I've been living in New Orleans, Louisiana for about 10 years now in South Louisiana. And I started back into my activism work with Standing Rock, with the Dakota Access Pipeline. And as we all know, that ignited a movement of water protectors across the globe, which has just seen fires lighting all over the place for the protection of Mother Earth and for the water that we all share. So the tail end of the Dakota Access Pipeline traveled down to South Louisiana under the name of the Bayou Bridge Pipeline. So after Standing Rock, back in Louisiana, I'm a mother, I'm an herbalist, I'm a writer, and I'm a water protector. So naturally, when this came down to South Louisiana, I was asked to join as a founding member of the Indigenous Women's Advisory Council for the Louis La Vie Pipeline Resistance Camp. And so we were successful in our strategies at stopping the construction of the Bayou Bridge Pipeline for a while. And so ALEC came in as a mechanism to basically stop the work that we were doing. With the corporations that came in, worked with the legislature, passed this bill, this critical infrastructure bill in Louisiana, which lists pipeline construction as critical infrastructure that supersedes water. So for us, this is just inherently wrong on so many levels. So several months after this, the law was passed, it came into, it was in effect in August. And about a week after that, they started to arrest several water protectors, myself included. I was detained, arrested without a warrant. And I was also targeted, which are some of the reasons why we're challenging this law at the state level. So there are over a dozen of us who are charged with felonies, and each charge we're face up to 5 years. So I'm facing, I have two charges, and so I'm facing up to 10 years in prison with hard labor in South Louisiana.
Wow.
And these are for things that were misdemeanor offenses. I mean, these are just the regular rich history in this country of engaging in regular peaceful activism.
And so one thing I wanted to also just point out is that in Louisiana, there are 125,000 plus miles of pipeline infrastructure that crisscrosses the state. And so this law is basically saying if anybody is on that critical infrastructure, which mind you is a 75 foot wide buffer with a pipeline in the middle of it. So at any given moment, there are probably thousands of people on a pipeline infrastructure on an easement. And so, you know, it's just, it goes from there. It goes from there, the racism and in terms of enforcing the law, targeting folks like myself, and so, yeah, there are just a lot of problems with this law, and we're
so
challenging this.
Would it be fair to say that because the corporate profits that Alec is clearly trying to protect are impacted by the activism of vulnerable communities and communities of color, that these policies are very much designed to put those profits ahead of the rights of people? Or does Alec go further, as far as you can tell, to actively promote white supremacy and corporate, you know, in line with corporate profits, Dom?
I mean, it's a great question. No one pays to get nothing in return.
Right.
I mean, so if you're still trying to work out what Alec is, it really is a club. It's a club for corporations to pay many thousands of dollars to get exclusive private access to lawmakers. In return, those lawmakers will take those laws and pass them through the state legislature. In return for that, they get their right-wing kudos, but they can also go back to those corporations and say, hey, I did you a favor passing the law that helps you generate more profits. Let's talk about how you can help me out. Around election times coming up next year might be a key moment for that. So it's very much this quid pro quo arrangement of this kind of exclusive club. So there's the profit side of it. But I'm glad that you asked that deeper question about the political philosophy, because as I was mentioning at the beginning, this is initially was established as a vehicle to engage Christian evangelical people into the voting mechanisms and into politics. And so what you see is a legacy of that. We have a lot of bills that on their face don't look like they're about generating profit. But in fact, they're much more about advancing this political agenda. Alec has been behind many bills like voter ID bills. And what we're seeing there is the systematic disenfranchisement of black and brown voters. If you look at a case in North Carolina, or which is the case I'm most aware of where a voter ID law was specifically struck down, the ruling of the court said that that voter ID bill was targeting African-American community with surgical precision. Now, that's a law that's introduced by and led as co-sponsored by ALEC-affiliated lawmakers. We saw it across the country. Introduced by lead sponsors, by ALEC lawmakers. So they're pursuing this twin agenda all at the same time. And those things are mutually reinforcing as well.
So the other aspects that you also cover in this report, because it was done in collaboration with a number of other organizations, including Dream Defenders and Palestine Legal, were the Stand Your Ground laws and also the Boycott Divestment Sanctions movement. So let's talk about Stand Your Ground laws, Dominic. What is the role that ALEC plays in this law that clearly puts the rights of gun owners above, you know, people's right to live, and sort of encourages vigilantism? It's a law that was most famously, you know, brought up in Florida around the killing of Trayvon Martin by Dan Zimmerman. Mm-hmm. George Zimmerman.
Exactly right. We go back to 2005. We see the NRA looking for ways to increase profits for its membership. NRA being a longtime member and collaborator of ALEC. I forget her name. Anyway, with the chief, Marianne Hammer. Marianne Hammer is a infamous NRA lobbyist in Florida. She connects up with two friendly allied state lawmakers in Florida to pass this Stand Your Ground law, because it obviously facilitating more guns in people's hands is much to the benefit of NRA members. So they passed this bill in Florida in 2005. And this is very classic for the way ALEC behaves. It doesn't necessarily always generate its own ideas. It sort of vacuums up the worst ideas going around the right-wing community and then platforms them out nationally. So the NRA turns up to the ALEC meeting in 2005. ALEC members adopt that as a policy for them. And then we see states, you know, across the country adopt these laws. And then we see the tragic murder and killing of Trayvon Martin by George Zimmerman whilst he was just walking home from a corner store to go and rejoin his dad on vacation. He was killed. And we see arising out of that the Black community saying enough and organizing themselves into the Black Lives Matter movement. It's just a classic case of where you see this corporate agenda working through ALEC to take one of these ideas, spread it out nationally, and lo and behold, again, we see those impacts hitting hardest on communities of color.
I'm wondering, Anne, if you want to comment on some of the other stories or the other issues that this report, ALEC Attacks, covers that impact communities of color, different communities that are, you know, unified in that they're non-white communities and often vulnerable communities.
Yes, it's very dangerous for us in our communities of color. We are the ones that are most affected by the policies of those corporations that are represented by ALEC, disproportionately affected. For instance, in South Louisiana, and like Dakota Access Pipeline was supposed to run through larger communities that weren't necessarily communities of color, and they were rerouted to come through and at the terminus and communities of color that are already jeopardized in their health and wellness right now because of the industries that are there. It's a community called Cancer Alley. St. James community is a terminus of the Bayou Bridge pipeline. They've also recently just renamed themselves as Death Alley because there really isn't a way out for them anymore to escape the poison. So these laws, ALEC is coming in to try to stop us and stop everybody from standing up for themselves and to try to put some fear into us for doing this, that we will spend time in prison. But I'm going to tell you what, we're not going to spend time in prison because we're taking this to court. Mm-hmm. We're going to challenge this, and we are challenging this.
I imagine just on the basis of the First Amendment.
The First Amendment, and also that the way it's written is really vague in terms of its enforcement. So like I said, there are 125,000 miles of pipeline in Louisiana. But they can, that what they've done is targeted us, and they've focused those efforts with local law enforcement to target us. Mm-hmm. And that's how this works. Mm-hmm. That's basically the template, and that's how it works.
We should touch also, I think, Sonali, if we have a minute, on the Palestinian rights.
Yes,
community.
Definitely. I was just about to turn to that very big and important issue, also very much, of course, based in First Amendment rights issues. And we're seeing, unfortunately, not just conservatives attack people's right to boycott Israel, but Democrats and liberals as well, right?
Well, such is the hold of such, well, what we call capture, what is such as the corporate capture of our democratic structures and processes, we see a lot of elected representatives feeling they really have no choice but to toe the line that is being expressed by the Israeli government. But at the way that that's playing out in the United States is for anyone who believes in the ability to speak out about what's happening in their society should be of grave concern. What we have here is a movement of Palestinian groups and diaspora around the world deciding in 2005 that all of the litigation and all of the law efforts at the UN and locally and in Israel and elsewhere was only getting them so far. We're talking a 50-plus year ongoing belligerent military occupation, and those groups decided to open up another strategy, which is a strategy that was used, quite honestly, to found this country. The Boston Tea movement was a boycott. It was a boycott of a product that was creating revenue for the British administration to colonize this country. And it's a very similar approach today. It's saying, look, if this Israeli state is not going to stop in its human rights violations of Palestinians, we need to send a different kind of message. Much in the same way that apartheid South Africa was in part ended because of the economic pressure to say, look, we won't stand for these human rights violations. The Palestinian movement around the world said that's exactly what they should do too. So that was taken up by Palestinian rights organizers in the United States, predominantly on university campuses as well. They were really leading the way. And so it is that reactionary forces like those in ALEC and many others, actually, not just at ALEC, decided that what they should do is literally eat away at one of the most treasured values of this country, which is to say, no, we don't like what you're saying, and we're going to criminalize it. So we see what was called anti-BDS bills. BDS, not to get too complicated here, really just stands for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. That is the collective name of the boycott strategy that the Palestinian movements began in 2005. So we see a wave, typical style of ALEC. We see some very pro-Israel voices within ALEC decide to initiate a draft law together with an organization that's very closely connected with Jay Sekulow, who's now Trump's personal lawyer. So Jay Sekulow and his organization team up with ALEC, and they begin to draft their own version of these bills, these anti-boycott laws. And we see them taken up right across the country. And we see that affecting people in so many ways, in ways, in fact, I believe they weren't initially intended. Those of you who remember the hurricanes that swept through Houston last year, I believe it was last year, maybe the year before, because of Texas's state anti-BDS law, those people who were subject to the worst, sorry, second worst hurricane of all time after Katrina, houses were absolutely obliterated. And if they wanted to apply for aid, people without houses, people who lost their whole livelihoods, if they wanted to apply for just aid in the wake of that hurricane, because of Texas's anti-BDS law, they had to say that they wouldn't participate in boycott activity. They had to write away, to sign away their First Amendment right. I mean, that's where this has gotten to. Granted, the people behind it decided, well, that was a bit complicated, so they decided to cut out people like that from being affected again. But that's how it's morphing into the everyday lives of marginalized people.
We're talking about a report called ALEC Attacks that goes through how this organization, ALEC, impacts voting rights of people of color, as well as the right to dissent, and many, many other rights, and the rights of gun owners over the rights of people to live. Let's talk about why the two of you are in Arizona. Anne White Hat, you are one of the people who is personally impacted by a law that ALEC promoted at the state level, and you're facing felony charges for your activism, for your role as a water protector in Louisiana. Why are you in Arizona as this annual meeting of ALEC opens?
Well, I'm pretty pissed off at ALEC, for one. So I'm here to support the local folks here who are doing this challenge, and we're going to go to their meeting and let them know that what they're doing, we don't support it, and that we're coming to stop Alec.
You're going to crash the meeting?
I'm here to share my story with folks locally and let them know the effects that these laws and the work that Alec has on common folks like myself. Okay, like I said, I'm an herbalist, I'm a writer, I'm a mother, water protector, and now they're affecting me this way. And so if they can come after me, they're going to come after the next person next to me. It doesn't matter who it is, it's coming. And so we need to work together, and we need to stop this legislation from moving forward and these kind of movements.
Dom, how secretive is this organization, and how important is the light of day on Alec's policies and how it operates?
Well, I'll put it to your listeners and viewers this way. I mean, if you've heard about voter ID laws, if you ever heard about Stand Your Ground, if you've heard about anti-BDS bills or bills against the Fight for 15, if you've heard of those movements, you know about Alec, you just didn't know their name. They've been around 46 years doing this kind of thing. And it's time that we shine a light on all of that. And I'm glad you asked about Phoenix. We're filing a lawsuit this week. Together with Puente, Mi Gente, the Arizona-Palestinian Solidarity Alliance, and Black Lives Matter Phoenix, because those organizations know firsthand the work of Alec. If you remember SB 1070 that was passed in 2010, which empowered local law enforcement to racially profile Black and Brown communities, that is a classic Alec Bill. It was taken by Russell Pierce, a former local state law maker, to an Alec meeting exactly 10 years ago in December 2009, promoting conservative policies to push brown folks out of Arizona. And it was unfortunately successful, as they would see it. And it became the principle in law became a show your papers policy, and the law enforcement were executing that widespread across the state. Those organizations remember that. They are of those communities. They have relatives, and some of them themselves were targeted and still to this day targeted by that policy. So it's very, very important that we're here in Phoenix to uplift those stories. If those of you who are online today and this week also, it's going to run all week, Alec Attacks is a hashtag, and a lot of groups are putting their material and their stories through that online.
We'll post a link to alecattacks.org as well, where people can get a hold of the actual report. Dom and Anne, good luck to both of you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
My guests have been Dominic Renfree, an advocacy program manager at the Center for Constitutional Rights, and Anne Whitehat, an indigenous water protector based in Louisiana. They've been speaking to me from Phoenix, Arizona, as the annual meeting of the American Legislative Exchange Council opens. We've been discussing the new CCR report conducted with other organizations called Alec Attacks. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.